meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide. The winds have changed.
Millennia ago, from a little cave on a tiny island of Patmos in the Aegean Sea, the heavens opened and a vision was revealed. Since then, the world has been fascinated by the cosmic upheaval brewing in the horizon of history. The upheaval is now upon us. It is within us. To some degree, it has always been. But there has been a sudden and violent shift in the affairs of the world. The winds have changed. Heaven will not be silent. Let us now join Father Anthony Bush, pastor of St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy, and author of A Mother's Plea, for the winds have changed. Together, we can pave the way for a hopeful response to the signs of our times.
Welcome, everyone. Welcome to The Winds of Change. I'm Father Tom Coy, so happy to be with you here, sitting in for Father Anthony Bush, along with our regular crew here. Tony?
The crew's here. Thank you for coming, Father. We missed you.
I haven't been here enough. Yes, I enjoy our time, and I hope all our listeners do as well. I must give warnings again at the beginning of my show that you have to concentrate. I'm sorry. This is not just background music, okay? It's hard to take the show in. You have to concentrate. Yeah. You have to concentrate, and that may be painful for some people. It helps us with our faith today. That's the goal of Winds of Change. It's always been, and I know all the ones I tune in when I listen to Father Anthony or the other guests. It's how, to look at the world around us and to live our faith better. Mm-hmm. I like to take people back into history. You know, when you look at the world around you, you can say, "I'll look at the world around me, the world that's going on right now."
Mm-hmm.
And that's certainly very important. But part of looking at the world around us is looking at the world behind us. And that's where history comes in. And I just find some of the stories of the past very crucial for understanding what we need to do today, what some of our mistakes were in the past, not to repeat them, to see the beauty of the heroes, the good heroes, and all the rest. So, but do you know what today's date is? I got to start out with this. Today is September
17th.
Happens to be my brother's birthday. I have two brothers that have shared a birthday today. And as much as I want to wish John, if you're listening, happy birthday. Yesterday was September
16th.
Now, I know that some of our listeners are bilingual. I know that this radio station has Spanish.
Happy birthday to your brother, John.
Oh, that's happy birthday to John.
You thought it was independent.
But I
was getting happy, too.
It also is appropriate because it's happy birthday to Mexico.
Yes.
Exactly.
Isn't that it? So we... but I, as a gringo with one side of me Mexican,
it's Mexicano, padre.
I have Mexicano blood because of, I do love the Mexican people as one of the Hispanic people. The Mexicans ones are the ones I'm closest to. It's where I've spent time. Father Pablo Straub, who, God rest his soul, was taken to God last year. Helped me in many ways with his wonderful preaching, with his wonderful dedication and all the rest. And I spent time with him down in Mexico. So I'm part Mexican, even though I'm really all American Slovak. but isn't that is one of the beauties of a strong Catholic heart, isn't it? If you have a strong Catholic heart, you could say things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's
it doesn't seem to contradict your identity, mm-hmm. you know? There is a sense that we're connected through a different kind of bond, a different kind of birth. Not a birth of our mother and father, the natural birth, but the birth through baptism. the birth through the waters of the Holy Spirit. And I think that theme needs to be set at the outset because I want to go into the story of Mexican independence. I happened to catch the show a couple of days ago, or maybe it was even last week, and we said, oh, Mexican Independence Day is coming up, and someone, I forgot who on the show, said, oh, that's the Cinco de Mayo.
Oh, no. Batalla de Puebla. That was the Battle of Puebla.
That's the Battle of Puebla, mm-hmm. And that didn't happen until 1862, which was right in the middle of our Civil War here in the United States. But when you start talking about Mexican independence, you have to go back to 1810. So I'm going to try to share with you blow by blow dates and names and places. Mm-hmm. Some of the places in Mexico are hard for people like me to pronounce, so I might need some
indigenous names. But Father, you're from Jalisco, right?
Yeah.
Like Tony.
Exactly. Jalisco. Parte de mí.
Sueros de Jalisco.
Right. No, I say I'm from Guerrero because that's Guerrero because that's where Father Pablo Straub was.
Okay.
And my secretary, if you're listening, Alicia, if they're from Jalisco, so I sometimes say I'm from Jalisco, too.
Oh, that's, half of my family's from Jalisco, Father.
Is that right?
And the other half is from Michoacán.
It's for those who don't know that much, you know, and I share this. We're obviously speaking in English now, obviously, our hour is in English. But I do hope that we do have a number of listeners that are bilingual. But even those who are not, Americans, we grew up learning our history of the United States here in our grade school, high schools, colleges, but we learned very little about the history of Mexico. And I hope I could make this interesting. I think it relates to a lot of things going on today, and there's some themes that I want to hit home. But even if just with the bare facts, I hope it's interesting for Americans, mm-hmm. just by virtue of knowing your neighbor. You know, you have a neighbor. It's good to know their life and what went on. Obviously, the United States and the history of the United States and the history of Mexico collide, we think, primarily in the Mexican-American War, which is obviously true. That happened in about the 1840s, 1846, I believe, 3 or 4 years there, right before our American Civil War. Many of the soldiers who fought in the American Civil War on both the North and the South side, they were enemies in the American Civil War. They were on the same side when America was fighting Mexico in the Mexican-American War. But that's for another show. Yesterday was the 16th of September. And so that we need to, I want to share some of the blow-by-blow details of that fateful day. I have to introduce, there's a few characters that we need to know and get clear. And some of Mexican listeners probably know these names. Some of them may know a lot more than I do, of course. Some people don't know much because the history is weakly taught or not taught at all. But we need to remember a name like Hidalgo. He was a priest, Padre Hidalgo. And if you want to look for some one father of Mexico, you often call upon the name of Hidalgo. Is that the way you hear it pronounced?
Hidalgo.
Just like he was a priest. He was a rector of a seminary, actually, for a little while. But he was very frustrated and upset about the Spanish rule oppressing the people, and he called upon the people to revolt against Spain. Mm-hmm. There's the figure of Padre Hidalgo. We need to remember him. He had a friend. Well, it's hard to say that he was a friend, but he was a partner in the early stages of the revolution, Allende, if you remember mm-hmm. that name, Allende. He was not a priest. He was more of a military man. And Allende had to play second fiddle to Padre Hidalgo. However, Allende was clearly the better soldier. He had better sense of how to win a battle. Unfortunately, Padre Hidalgo and Allende did fight a lot. Some things I read said they hated each other. But they fought together against Spain in those early days. One of the things I want to clear up for our listeners is this is not about Cinco de Mayo.
No.
When you get to September 16th, it's not about Cinco de Mayo. It's all about, I call it the period in Mexican history, which I call the shaking off of Spain, the shaking off of Spain. That brings me, I do want to read something that I found by an English author, an English historian, you know, not Catholic, not Mexican, but one who studied a lot of the history. And being English, you would think she wouldn't be so adept or quick to praise the colonial period of Mexico, because the colonial period of Mexico was really stamped by Catholicism. You know, it was a period where there was a lot of it was the early stages, but Catholicism had a lot to do with colonial Mexico. So this English author, she says, her name is Evelyn Vaughn, she writes this: by 1575, you know, a little bit after Cortez went and conquered the Mayans and the Aztecs, well, a good 75 years afterwards, and it was 100 years before, she writes, it was 100 years before colonial America set up its first printing press. Books were already being printed in Mexico City, not only in Spanish, but 12 other indigenous languages. At that time, there were already 3 universities in New Spain, nearly 100 years before Harvard opened in colonial America. There was a medical school at the Royal and Pontifical University of Mexico. That's a key phrase, remember, Royal and Pontifical University. What does that title refer to? Royal, they were loyal to the crown, King Ferdinand and all that, and Pontifical, they were loyal to the Pope. That university has a strange history all of itself. It was fought over. It was established early on in the history of Mexico by the Spaniards with the help of the priests, with the blessing of the Pope. And it was opened and closed and opened and closed and fought. And it finally closed its door for the last time not that long ago. But anyway, that university in Mexico City was opened 200 years before Harvard opened its medical school. The medical school in Mexico began doing dissections 86 years before William Hunter opened his school of dissection in England. So what is that saying? You know, I think that's a good thing to put in context. It's saying that colonial Mexico was almost ahead. It was certainly ahead in terms of science and this cultural advancement, certainly ahead of colonial America. And it took root that it was even ahead of some of Europe, because Europe was still, it had a fresh start in a certain sense, you know? So anyways, I think that's a beautiful thing to keep in mind as we look at the history of the 16th of September, 1810. And you know what it's associated with, right, Christina or Tony? There's a grito.
El grito de Dolores.
Grito de Dolores, the cry of the suffering. Mm-hmm. You could translate that.
I was going to ask you, Father, because I was under the understanding that also the Feast of Our Lady of Sorrows is on the 15th, no?
Yeah.
And then
The Exaltation of the Cross mm-hmm. is the 14th.
The 14th.
Feast of Our Lady of Sorrows is the 15th.
And you know,
then you got Grito de Dolores.
The Grito de Dolores, Nuestra Señora de Dolores, yeah. de los Dolores.
Now, it's possible that Padre Hidalgo had that in mind, although I don't, he wasn't that
that
religious.
He was a priest, but he wasn't that religious.
And unfortunately, one little details I read about the 16th, it was a Sunday, mm-hmm. and he forgot to celebrate Mass.
Oh.
Or he didn't celebrate
That's
Mass.
That's why he was crying.
On the 16th. He was busy crying. The story goes is that he was keeping the spark. Not only was he worried about the spirit of independence, obviously coming from the United States of America up north, you know, certainly word got down. Hey, the colonists up north are breaking the chains from England, you know. Obviously, you would think about doing the same down in Mexico. But again, remember, too, that the chains that were King Henry, King George III, who mm-hmm. was the king of England in the time of our American Revolution, King George III did seem to be more vicious and more enslaved the American colonists more than King Ferdinand or even Charles V in Spain with the colonists in Mexico. And I think it has a lot to do with the way the early settlers intermarried. Mm-hmm. In Mexico, there was a lot of intermarrying mm-hmm. with the natives. And I think that has a lot to do with the fact that the missionaries were saying, we got to baptize these people, not scalp them, you know?
That's where the mestizos came out, right?
Yeah, absolutely, right. And that was... So we're going back into that time. And I think some of these lessons are applicable today. You know, Catholicism still should guide us to a sense of unity, a sense of truth, a sense of belonging that can transcend but not deny biological bonds. Mm-hmm. And obviously, biological bonds have a lot to do with other bonds. Like I say, if the Spanish colonists intermarried with indigenous, then you produce children, and obviously those children would not be so anti-Indian, you know, because your grandmother is from one of the tribes, you know, et cetera. And that is a major, major difference between the two stories of Mexico and the United States. And what's one of the great criticisms that a lot of people have when they're anti-American today? Look at the way America treated the Indians. You know, yeah. Isn't that true today?
Yep.
You get it in college. You get it in high school. America deserves what we're getting from September 11th because we have such a bad history. We're such a bad people. Look what we did to the Native American Indians. And I want to raise my hand and say, excuse me, Catholics were trying to baptize the Indians. We weren't, you know, and the truth be told, yes, there were battles. Yes, there was killings, and perhaps our president, who's perhaps most anti-Native American Indian, would be Andrew Jackson. Yes, his life is a checkered past, as it were. But nonetheless, there were a lot of advancements made, et cetera. And so the Christian seeds in the Native American Indians is a story that's not told very much. When we hear about Native American Indians, we go, well, here's the old religion. Here's their old traditions. And they're trying to recover their old religions, which often case is leapfrogging over 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 generations of Christians to get back to those pagan religions, you know. For the Native Americans to deny a great deal of their Christian and many times Catholic ancestors is missing a great part of their story, you know. So here we are. That's just setting the stage. Mm-hmm. We got to take a break now, but I want to get to. Let's go with a blow-by-blow story of Padre Hidalgo and that revolution. It doesn't take long to get through his story because it's a real quick story, but it's very fascinating, and I think it's worth reviewing on this 17th day of September. I'm Father Tom Coyes, sitting in for Father Anthony Bush, and you're listening to the listener-supported The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
All right, pets, pipe down. I've got something to say to you. Yes, that means you too. Please tell your owners that Father Anthony would like to bless all of you on Saturday, October 4th at 9 a.m. for the St. Francis of Assisi Blessing of the Animals. That's right, Saturday, October 4th at 9 a.m. at St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of Divine Mercy in Chicago, the corner of Evergreen and Noble, just off Division, right off the Kennedy Expressway. And the goldfish are welcome too. The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com. You've heard us say that Winds of Change is listener supported. That means you help us stay on the air with your dollars and your prayers. And we are asking for that help now. Please take a moment and go to our website, windsofchangeshow.com. That's windsofchangeshow.com. On the upper right-hand side of the page, there is a link, Support Winds of Change Show. Click on that link and donate securely with any major credit card. With your help, Winds of Change will continue to bring you the truth.
Good afternoon, everyone. I hope we do bring you the truth, things to chew on, things to help us pray about, you know. And as I sometimes do when I come here on Wednesdays, I like to bring history to life because we got to know the past, to know what's going on now, who we are. It's part of our identity, you know. And so this being the day after the 16th of September, I couldn't resist to do a show on Mexican Independence Day, you know. And just going back to the story of Padre Hidalgo and the Grito de Dolores. I also want to say, too, here's another part of the introduction. I got to do all this introduction before I get to the meat and the juice of the juicy story, you know.
But it's in the juice.
You like the juice. Right?
This is why I want to get to the juice. there's different themes. When I read more and research more about the story of Mexico, number one, I'm interested in it because I'm Catholic, mm-hmm. and I think the fact that Catholicism played such an important role, it makes me compare what went on down there with what goes on in the United States. Also, just because it's a neighbor, it's good to know the neighbor. But there's these different stories. The themes, that when you look at the story of Mexico, it's a story of strange relationships or estranged relationships, people who were together for a time and became enemies. You know, they were friends and became enemies, betrayals. There's all sorts of different stories of betrayals, etc. It's also somewhat of a story of David and Goliath, but not in the way you think of David, the small group, beating Goliath, the big group. Unfortunately, especially in the early parts of the Mexican history, it was the Goliath beating. David did beat Goliath, but Goliath was the rebels. There are a lot of battles. When you read about the battles, you see that it was 10,000 soldiers against 6,000 soldiers, and the 6,000 won. Those 6,000 were from the loyal army, the well-trained army, the loyalists to the crown of Spain. And it just shows when historians go back and look at these battles and the ragtag army that was the Mexican Revolution. You could see it must have been a ragtag revolution. There's a little scene in the movie For Greater Glory. Do you remember that movie? I hope you've had a chance to see it. If not, try to look at it, my friends.
Well worth owning. It's a very good movie.
It's a powerful movie.
It is. You can watch it. There's a scene when the general finally gets some of the jefes of the banditos together. And remember, he had such a hard time convincing the jefe, the bosses of the gangs to fight together. They all just wanted to fight their own way. Mm-hmm. And that little scene is so true to the story, is what I've all read. Because the gangs, there were lots, but they lost many times. When they had the Spanish, the royal army outnumbered 10 to 1, they still would lose, you know, which tells you it just wasn't planned well, mm-hmm. you know. So anyways, it's the story of David and Goliath in a lot of ways, but not what you might think. You know, you like to think, the David is the underdog and he beats the big bad Goliath. And here we have a Goliath who's the freedom fighters who we'd like to sympathize with, but they get beat up by the small army that's the loyalist. I just wonder, one of the books that I recommend highly to so many is a book called Blood-Drenched Altars by an American bishop by the name of Bishop Clement Kelly. He was from Chicago here. Well, he actually was born in Nova Scotia in Canada, but then he moved to Michigan, and then he came to Chicago. He was eventually made a bishop, and he moved out to Omaha, Nebraska, where he became a bishop. But he met many, many refugees from the revolution of the 1910s and 20s, because he was head of the Catholic Church's Extension Society. I think we've talked about that some of these past shows, that these things come together. And he speaks of the Mexican Revolution kind of came too early, even though it came a little bit after our American Revolution in 1776. This is 1810, 30 years later. But he said Mexico didn't need a revolution, or they weren't prepared for it. In the way that it was kind of disorganized, and as you go through the story, you see that that's kind of true. And there's a chance. One of the great insights of the story that I got to get to is the way that the Spanish viceroy was like the governor in charge of Mexico, who was answerable to the king, you know. And this guy's name was Odojú. On the Feast of St. Bartholomew, I remember this because I was at
St. Bartholomew
Church. On the Feast of St. Bartholomew, he signed papers over and said, hey, it's your country. We're behind you. That I'm the viceroy speaking in the name of the queen or the king in Spain, and we are ready to pass off the reins of government to you, Unfortunately, he did do that. He did say that. It was to Agustín Iturbides. Do you say it with an S at the end? Have you heard of Iturbide? I sometimes hear Iturbides or Iturbide.
Agustín
Iturbides. Do you hear that?
Agustín Iturbides.
You put an S on it, because sometimes I see it with an S, sometimes I don't. But anyways, he was an emperor. he didn't really want to be it, but that's what happened. And maybe he did. Who knows? But anyways, Spain was very ready to turn it over. And the viceroy even drew up the papers. That's called the Treaty of Cordova. If you might hear that from time to time, the Treaty of Cordova. And it was a peaceful exchange of the reins of power. But it didn't last, and it didn't go that way. And I think what Bishop Clement Kelly says is part of the reason. It just, what, the people weren't ready enough. It wasn't planned out well enough, and there were too many egos in the way. I'm jumping around here a bit, and one of the things that Iturbides did that got some of the other people mad is when he was ready to be president, or he was ready to be whatever, but the people made him the president. And during that period of the congresos that would gather together to write up their constitutions, they gave the presidency the hereditary succession. Mm-hmm. Well, what does that mean? If you make a president hereditary succession, what do you got? You got a monarchy again. It doesn't really work that way. There's something wrong with that picture. So obviously they didn't quite figure out the subtle distinction between monarchies and presidencies. Not only did he become president with right of hereditary succession, they gave him the title of His Majesty. Mm. And then, of course, it was your emperor. And a lot of people wanted that, because if you put yourself back in that time, in Mexico, this thing called the Republic wasn't a tried and true idea. The only ones who tried it so far was those crazy colonists up north, mm-hmm. the Americans. That was America started the whole ideas of this republic, unless you go way back to the Greek times when the Romans and all that. But you didn't have a tried and true system when you said, oh, we want a republic. And so those who wanted an emperor were saying, yeah, Europe has done pretty good for the past 1,000 years. We need to continue that over here, so you need an emperor, you need a king, etc. So that is the confusing time, and it puts in perspective for us. We say, we're fighting for democracy, we're doing it. It shows a bit of the relative value of the forms of government vis-a-vis the principles that the leaders of those forms of government are holding on to. And that's where faith and good thinking and morality come into play. And that's why we're facing problems today. We could say, democracy, we have a republic, but where are the principles? What principles are they operating on? One of my great frustrations when you listen to political debates is that you hear drivel. you don't hear much political philosophy. You don't hear much discussion about what's good about the Constitution, what's bad about the Constitution, what are we going to save about it, what are we going to change about it, etc. It's turned into a popularity contest, and who's going to give you more, who promises you more, etc. So that's where I think it comes in today. But anyways, the story of Mexico, again, it's a story of strange relationships. It's a story of Goliath and David. It's also a story of Catholic versus non-Catholic, Catholic versus Protestant. It focuses on that distinction. One of the things that was set up in the original constitutions was that Catholicism would be the only religion tolerated. Father Hidalgo, the guy after him, Father Morelos, and Iturbides, they all, that's how the succession kind of goes, if I could put that in perspective for everybody. It was Padre Hidalgo who started it. He was captured and executed. Then Padre Jose Maria Morelos, for whom Morelia is named, he lived in the town of Valladolid, which was what Morelia was called before it was called Morelia. And he was captured and executed. They did want to have Catholicism, and even Iturbides as the emperor. They all wanted to say Catholicism would be it will be the official religion of Mexico. And for our modern ears, we might say, that's kind of strange, you know. Down in Mexico, you couldn't get away with that today, you know, in a sense. There's this flood. The dam waters have broken for religious freedom, and you can't say. But you got to remember that England at the same time was saying the opposite. England was saying no Catholics. England was passing laws anti, and they had been for a couple of hundred years. England was saying we cannot have a Catholic king. You can't have a king who's married to a Catholic. You can't have members of parliament that are Catholic. You know, so there are all these anti-Catholic laws. So the people down in Mexico were saying, hey, we're starting a new country. We're going to show those Brits. And we're going to say Catholicism is the only religion here. Sort of to balance off, you know, the scales, as it were. So, oh gosh. Well, I'm getting through my themes. And I promise you I'll get to some of the juicy details. let's take another break, okay? And please stay tuned. We'll go through 1810, 11, 12, and 13 at least, okay? We'll try to get through 3 years. I'm Father Tom Coys, sitting in for Father Anthony Bush, and you're listening to Listener Supported, The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
Winds of Change broadcasts from the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy at the historic St. Stanislaus Kostka Church, located two blocks north off Division on Noble at the Division Street exit off the Kennedy. Since 1867, St. Stanislaus Kostka Church has been serving the faithful of Chicagoland since 1867. With your help, St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy, can continue its mission to bring Christ to His people. Please donate now by going to sanctuaryofthedivinemercy.org. That's sanctuaryofthedivinemercy.org. And click on the donations link to make a secure donation with a major credit card or debit card. With your help, St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy, will continue its restoration and will continue to thrive for the body of Christ. The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
Can you imagine living a life without love, marriage, intimacy, sex, having children, or friendship? Of course not. I am Father Thomas Loya with a Theology of the Body moment for the Tabor Life Institute. Why do we desire these things so much? It is because God, who is Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, is a union and communion of persons who united Himself with us in what the Scripture describes as a mystical marriage, a fruitful self-giving. Scripture also says that we are made in God's image and likeness, so we too are called to become a union and communion of persons in fruitful self-giving. This is why we cannot imagine living without marriage, intimacy, sex, having children, and friendship. Pope John Paul II said in his Theology of the Body that these are the very things that make us most like God. To find out more about the Theology of the Body, visit taborlife.org. Taborlife.org.
Welcome back, everyone. Hey, good to be with you. I hope you're enjoying a little jaunt into history.
Wow.
You
just wrinkled my brain, man.
That's the way I feel.
I didn't think I was wrinkling that many brains, you know?
Oh, yeah.
It is. Okay, good. Well, it's my goal in life, you know? Also, my goal, I want to help people live the faith, understand the delicate role and the delicate balance between the world of politics and the world of religion. I don't like the huge American sort of doctrine that says they shall never meet. Mm-hmm. I think that itself is somewhat of a anti-religious a sentiment or a thought. It has to be careful. It can be like nitroglycerin. You know, you put two chemicals together and it might blow up.
Boom.
But it's also what even dynamite.
Oh, no.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. But even that example of dynamite, dynamite was invented by, you know who invented dynamite? The guy who gives us the Nobel Peace Prize, Alfred Nobel. He's the one who invented dynamite.
Interesting. Hmm.
And obviously, when they came up with this explosive sticks, it said, oh gosh, this is going to be dangerous. It'll be used for war right away. Well, of course it was, and it is, mm-hmm. but it was also used to build bridges, dig canals,
yeah.
you know, move huge rocks.
blow them up.
You know, blow them up. It was used to great good. So faith and religion and politics do need to rub shoulders with each other, you know. And to keep them apart, I think, is as dangerous as bringing them together. And I have to say, in our day today, you know, we're talking about a Mexican independence. We're back in the 1800s. But in our day today, I think a lot of young people, when they would say, oh, keep religion away from the public world, they're influenced a lot by Islam. I really think that the way that Islam brings religion and politics together, and the way that they see if here are these people who are believing in God are ready to destroy people and take to terrorism so quickly, then they say, I don't want any part of God. If yep. that's what God is pushing people to do, then they don't say, you know, Tony, you're shaking your head. That makes sense. Does, yeah. You know, it's a kind of, is that natural? Well, in a sense, it's natural, but couldn't there be a third option, you know, or a second option? You know, you say Islam with its partnership with terrorism is turning people off of religion. I think many Muslim people probably are becoming atheists, but they're not exploring Christianity. Mm. It's kind of like, I know I'm not going to go to Christianity, so I might as well be an atheist. Mm. I remember hearing Scott Hahn when he talks about his conversion. He was a Presbyterian, if you remember. Those of our listeners who know Scott Hahn, many of them I think do. But when he was a Presbyterian, he was thinking of conversion. As he was reading the Bible, he told his wife, or people were asking him, you sound like you're going to become Catholic. And his wife, Kimberly, even said, you're not going to become Catholic, are you? You know, but couldn't you consider becoming Anglican or Presbyterian or you know, church? Another, but not Catholic. You know, you're not going to consider that. And I hate to use this. Well, I don't hate to use it, but I'm going to use it. Some people who get disenfranchised with the Democratic Party, especially people who are pro-life, and they'll see, look at all the pro-abortion moves and things they're doing. They defend abortion so strongly, but they will say, but I won't be a Republican,
exactly.
You know, it's they're not going to go there, you know, that they'd take themselves mm-hmm. out of the game instead of changing parties, mm-hmm. as it were. And I do think that's a silly move. And those who are strongly religious, I could feel very easily bouncing back and forth. You know, in a certain way, if I see somebody good in one party, I'll bounce back and forth. As it is, I don't think I bounce back and forth too much these days because there is such a consistency in the right. defense of abortion rights that it just can't bounce back and forth too much. But anyways, that's when you look at these things in history, these present day issues come to mind. Where were we? Where were we before I got onto my other diatribe?
2 to 3 years.
18, 10, 11, 12, 13. Yes. Poor Father Hidalgo, he started his campaign in September of 1810, and the poor guy was executed just a year later. Yeah. So that Sunday, September 16th, where he gets his little band together. Interestingly enough, a little detail I read was that he borrows $200 or pesos, whatever, from the Spanish rich lady of the town, you know, who would have been obviously probably against a rebellion. And he uses that money to start his little rebellion. He never pays her back, unfortunately.
He got killed before he could pay her back.
If you give him a little more time, I'll pay you that back, you know. But unfortunately, one of his first moves was to imprison a bunch of the Spaniards, and he executed a bunch of the Spaniards. He rounded up. One of the first things he did was he freed some of the Mexican, the indigenous, or I'll call them Mexican prisoners that the Spaniards had. Well, I got to say this too. I'm using those words, Mexicans versus Spanish. But that's not a good description either, because there's a lot of mixed.
There's
a lot of mixed going on. And that's, it would be a mistake to think that the war, the battles that began were between just the indigenous and just the Spanish, because most of the armies were filled with a mixture. And even some of the generals who were loyal to Spain were indigenous as well. So it brings to mind the question of nativism versus non-nativism. You know, we're facing that here with the immigration issue that we're facing today in the United States. We're hearing strong spirits of nativism saying you have to be a native. And that is the norm throughout history. The concept of being able to convert to another nation, to another nation state, is what's rare. And I truly believe that that's one of the United States of America's beautiful parts. In other words, an Italian going to France doesn't convert into a Frenchman. An Englishman going to Scotland doesn't become a Scot. But a Mexican coming to the United States can become an American. I don't know how it is. I don't know that many Americans that go to Mexico to become a Mexican. But it probably is not the same as in the American mystique, as it were. And so when you look at the battles, when you look at the early times of the Revolution, and you see a lot of the indigenous mixed together, and some of the army was a mixture on one side, and the other army fighting for the crown was a mixture as well. But anyways, Hidalgo and his friend Allende join up together. And here's the, in January of 1811, okay, so September, October, November, December, January, there's a famous battle of the Bridge of Calderon. Maybe you remember that one. That's a little bit famous. Hidalgo had 100,000 men. The general he was facing was by a guy by the name of Calleja. He was the Spanish general. He had 6,000 men. Hmm. Can you imagine that? 6,000 against 10,000. Guess who wins?
The 6,000.
The 6,000.
Because they were well trained.
They were better trained. Battle. And Calleja.
Did they have the horses? Yeah, they did, right?
They had the Spanish horses. Not too many cannons. That comes into play, too. I think I read that Calleja had 2 cannons.
That would be an advantage, no, having the horses, as opposed to...
Well, they both had horses.
Yeah,
okay. I didn't read anything that would say they... rancheros, the people and the farmers would obviously bring their horses as best they could. So, but anyway, in January 1811, I'm going to back up a little bit. Let's go back to September 2010. Right afterwards, Hidalgo and Ignacio Allende, they head to San Miguel. Their first trip is to San Miguel, and they take it over pretty quickly. They take over San Miguel, and they take over Celaya. There.
Guanajuato.
Right. And they take it over pretty well, as well as Querétaro. Mm-hmm. Querétaro. So boom, boom, boom. They have 3 quick. And then the natives don't put up much of a fight because why are they going to fight? They're going to go for the independence, blah, blah, blah. They don't meet any resistance. There's an interesting story in, that was all in September. They just do boom, boom, boom in September. October rolls around, and they head up north to Valladolid and Acámbaro, mm-hmm. and then Toluca. And there's an interesting story in one of those battles where Padre Hidalgo captures some of the Spaniards. He he just rounds up. He goes into a city and he rounds up the Spaniards. He puts them in jail, and sometimes he executed them. A Franciscan priest on November 14th walks into the street with a cross. You know, a Franciscan priest facing
East.
Padre Hidalgo, who's a regular diocesan priest, if you will. And he begs them to not kill those prisoners. And he says, okay, he doesn't. Another time, a Carmelite sister does the same thing. Mm-hmm. So you got this guy on fire with independence, but not necessarily holding his reins back, as it were. He's all about killing the Spaniards and just getting them out. So in November, Calleja, the Spanish general, although he's not a Spaniard, he attacks Allende at Guanajuato. Allende flees, but before he flees Guanajuato, he has 247 Spaniards killed, rounded up and killed. Get them out of here. And this is the time when Allende and Hidalgo meet and they part company. They're arguing about who's the chief, who's the leader, and they decide to part company. And it's they get together to go into Mexico City. Okay, we gotta get into Mexico City. We gotta take Mexico City, or we don't really have a chance. So they make their way, and they have pretty good luck. And Allende says, "Let's keep going. We gotta get in there and capture the palace, and we're on a roll." And remember, Allende was the more astute army guy, the strategist. Mm-hmm. Padre Hidalgo was the spirit. He was the force, and he had the say-so, so to speak, I guess. And historians who study this stuff, I read, say this is one of Padre Hidalgo's greatest military mistakes of his life. It's so much. What would have changed had Hidalgo listened to Allende at that point and just gone in, taken over the palace? They probably would have cut the war much shorter, maybe. Well, when you look at the rest of the history, you say, well, it might have lasted for 3 months. That's the other incredible part of the story is when you look at it, you think somebody's got the power, there's going to be control, there's going to be peace, there's going to be a little bit of prosperity, et cetera. But someone else, sometimes from his own team, realizes, I don't like what you're doing. We gotta get you out, and we gotta put me in. You know, something like that. So, okay, we're getting there, and then let's see. November of 1810, Calleja Hidalgo, after those three little towns, he goes to Acapulco. Calleja defeats Padre Hidalgo down in Acapulco, and then here's where the story starts to end already. You know, he has a little bit of success. January 21st, 1811, Calleja enters Guadalajara after defeating Hidalgo at the Puente de Calderon. Remember, with the 10,000 versus the 6,000. So that's at the end of January. In February, then, of 1811, Hidalgo and Allende, they meet up in Zacatecas. And again, they fight... fight over who's the jefe, and they both decide, well, let's get out of town for a little while. They head up to as far north that they want to get into the United States. They figure, let's get up in the United States. We'll rearrange, we'll regroup, which would have been Texas, what we now know of Texas time. That they wouldn't really be going to the United States. But they're captured in February of 1811. So March of 1811. It was Ignacio Elizonda, and what is now San Antonio, Texas. He captures Hidalgo and Allende at the Wells of Bajan. You might remember, that's kind of a famous little place. They're captured by the Loyalist army, and they wait a trial, and they're executed. Because Hidalgo was a priest, he not only faced a civil trial and faced execution, but he also had to face
the church
Catholic trial to see whether he could be buried as a Catholic. Should he be excommunicated or not? He wasn't officially excommunicated, but he did incur the wrath of a lot of the bishops. And Father Jose Maria Morelos was excommunicated, but before he was executed, he was exonerated. The excommunication was lifted. Interestingly enough, so we're getting close to this, getting close to our the end of our hour, and I want to put some things in context. And before I forget, I promised we are having, speaking of all these political crazy things going on, jump back to the year 2014, if you would, for a little while, at my little parish out in Lamont, St. James of the Sag, we're having a pro-life Democrat politician by the name of Congressman Lipinski come. He's going to give a little presentation on the challenges of being a Catholic politician in the United States today. So if you're anywhere near the southwest side, you can get to Lamont, St. James of the Sag, on Saturday, September 27th at 6:30 p.m. Come on over to St. James. It'll be a wonderful night, and I'm sure Congressman Lipinski will give us a very interesting things to talk about. In that context, I think we need pack a couple more themes in there. Am I making any sense, or do you have questions?
Please go on.
Because I just find this so interesting, you know. But the story of Mexico also is, it helps us meditate on the meaning of what independence is. Just the very concept of, yes, we can fight for independence. And we all kind of think we know what that means. You know, when we think of the United States, we think of Mexico, we think of all these different countries. But the story of Mexico focuses us a little bit more astutely on that, because Padre Hidalgo tries for independence from Spain. And as I said, when Agustín Iturbides was actually a general who fought against who was with the Spaniard army, fighting against Morelos. Mm-hmm. But then he quickly turns into I'm for independence. He's with the Spaniards, but then fighting for the Spaniards, he has a conversion of sorts, and he says, I think this independence is a good idea. So he's all for independence. And so the kind of independence he brings is different a little bit. He wants a more reconciliation between the Spaniards and the indigenous, as it were. One of the things that both Father Hidalgo and Morelos were insistent on is kicking all the Spaniards out of Mexico. And here's Iturbides, and he says, we got to be able to let them stay. There's got to be a way of being a Mexican citizen, even though you're not born here. Does that make any sense for what else we're going on today?
Yeah.
The stories are millions. Thanks for listening. I hope some of this piques your interest, and pray hard, my friends. Visit your Adoration Chapel. Hug your kids. Get to Mass. And study your history. We're making history every day. I'm Father Tom Coyes. You've been listening to Listener Supported, The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
What's there to say when the world makes no sense? Do we search deeper truths or sit on the fence? Can you see?